laboratories I like. Women strivers, and of course, women drivers. I like what you like, and we like dykes.
Being a lesbian, yes, I like being a dyke girl. I like being a lesbian. it, Laura Love singing about her booty, my booty. That's off of her newest CD called Shum Tiki. And you are listening to the Lesbian Power Authority on KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and 106.7 FM in St. Paul. This program is supported by KFAI listener members and Lavender Magazine, serving the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and friends. Lavender Magazine is distributed bi-weekly throughout the Twin Cities and the region. Lavender Magazine's phone number is 612-871-2237. And my name is Mev, and without Mathia this evening, but not alone at all. I'm very proud and excited to have Sharon Bridgeforth with me in the studio this evening. Hello, Sharon.
Hey there. Glad to be here.
Yeah, great. Sharon is the author of Bulging Stories, and for those of you who are regular listeners and tuned in last week to the engineering fiasco that it was, Sharon was wonderful to come into the studio this evening after her week of events. You've been doing a lot this week.
Yeah, it's been a wonderfully busy week. Eleanor Savage has been the point person coordinator of my stay this week, and I read at the Fried Bread and Chitlin series at Intermedia Arts on Friday. I read at Vulva Riot last night, which was a riot. It was so much fun. It was a wonderful turnout of people, and the other people on program were just exceptional. I told Eleanor it was like the perfect event in my mind. And I did a couple of workshops with the Walker teens. They're preparing for a performance that they're going to present May 1st. And I did a workshop with some playwrights that have been commissioned by the Jerome Foundation. So it's been busy, busy. And I've been just having fun hanging out with folks, too.
Yeah. And then this next week, you're just playing?
Just chilling. I stayed to see the show that's opening at Penumbra April 7th. The playwright Carl Hancock Rux is one of my favorite poets, and Lori Carlos is directing it, and I love her and her work, and Sanja Parks, who used to work with me with Root Women, is in the show, so I'm just going to just follow them around.
Great. And you're coming back to the Twin Cities later on, too. You're doing something at Penumbra in the
future?
Yeah,
in June I'll be a part of the late night series. Myself and a young poet from Austin named Zell Miller will be returning. We'll be here around June 12th.
Great. Well, we are in the studio with Sharon Bridgeforth this evening on the Lesbian Power Authority, and Sharon has brought a tape of one of her theatrical readings from the Bulging Stories, right?
We're releasing a CD, an audio recording of the book, and so it's going to come out in CD form first at the end of April. And then it will come out a little bit later in cassette form. So it's an audio book. And the story that we're going to hear is called Bulging is B.J. LaRue. And it's a little exploration of gender bending a little bit on Bulging's part. And it features Deacon John, who he's a New Orleans blues guitarist, musician, very... in New Orleans, very famous. He told me he hasn't traveled a lot, but he's like a landmark in the New Orleans area. And he is also happens to be the father of my publisher. So Deacon John is playing the guitar on the CD, and my daughter is singing. And so on this cut, it features all three of us. I'm reading, my daughter's singing, and Deacon John is playing the guitar.
Okay, so this is a little taste of the Bulging
story
that's going to be coming out.
Yeah, and I must say that this is like fresh out of the recording studio, so it's not this particular copy is mine, and it hasn't been mastered. So when hopefully for folk that buy the CD, I can tell you that it'll be mastered and smoothed, which just basically means, you know, it takes out the page turning and some of the other little noises.
And does this piece have a name? Or is it?
It's called Bulging is B.J. LaRue.
All right, right. Okay, here we go.
I now know the secret of B.J. LaRue. B.J. lived what you call a sporting life. Sports different women's all the time. Till old Mary Boutte come along, never left. B.J. sang somewhere uptown, leave round dinner, come back at lunch, Tuesday through Sunday. Till old Mary Boutte come long. B.J. pressed, always crisp,
where black short-sleeved shirts show how hard the meat packed. Bagged pants belted up, winged out, fresh-shined shoes, skin greased, hair low, slick. BJ be sportin'. I've been trying to find out where that club is so I can go get me some singing too. Anyway, something about BJ have always twitched my mind. Couldn't figure exactly what it were. Then it come to me. BJ LaRue? Bulldog Jean. Yes, sir. See, back home, my mama's sister lived next to the Dutre house, by the crawfish hole over to the LaRues. The LaRue boys, Hidden Stick, Strain Finger, Song, and Hornhead is musical. Hidden Stick boy Tootie married Miss New Moon girl. Had too many babies, sent the oldest to their city sister. I thinkin' I ain't never seen the child till I heard BJ singin'.
I like to be the coffee in your cup. The first thing you put your lips on each day. I like to be the coffee in your cup. What you grind that night to get on your way.
I'm trying to get old Mary Boutte to let her back in the house. Sound just like she daddy Tootie, Miss New Moon girl, man. I said, baby, you ain't got to stand in that yard singing for supper. I got plenty food right here. Anyway, apparently the club owners twist off she name, make more money letting men think her a man singing man's sorrows. I tell you what, them women's know her, she be all flocked around. I hear she don't even try to make no business with them. Just hug up, talk, have tea, listen to they. Then old Mary Boutte come along, tore that playhouse down. I said, just tell me why you had to invite Mary Stay? Bull Jean say, it was the way she smiled at me with her eyes, pouty lips, parted deep breath laugh, the sun resting on her neck, head back a little to the side. It was the way one strap fell slightly off her shoulder, breast sitting playful, waist curving, hips turned in seat just a bit. It was the way she knew me with her smile that told me this woman was home. Anyway, Bull Jean, still sported, dressing black, package hard, except now go uptown after dinner, be home by dusk, Tuesday through Saturday. Oh, Mary makes she go to church. Let me be the coffee in your cup. Hold me close, smell your memories wake. Black with a little sugar made to fit your taste. Stir and sip me slow, don't let none go to waste. I need to be your coffee, baby. Long as you want your cup filled up, I'd like to be the coffee, baby, waiting for you in your cup.
I'd like to be the coffee in your cup. The first thing you put your lips on each day. I'd like to be the coffee in your cup, what you grind that night to get on the way.
Whoa. That was Sharon Bridgeforth reading from the Bull Jean Stories and with other help.
Yeah,
that was really wonderful.
Thank you.
So now, did you write that tune yourself? Or
yeah, I wrote the words, and my daughter and Deacon John assigned the tune to it. You know, basically the deacon played the guitar and kind of told her to try different things, and they worked it on out.
How old's your daughter?
She's 16. She'll be 17 in June.
Well, and does she perform? Otherwise, she just do this for you, or is she?
Well, she does musical theater, and she also sings in church. And this is the she has worked with me in the past in theater with the Root Women Theater Company, but it's been behind the scenes. It's been like handing out programs. I mean, she's been working with me since she was a little bitty girl, handing out programs, sweeping the stage, selling T-shirts. In fact, when we were here, I think it was in 96 or 97, for Dyke Night, she sold T-shirts for us. And so, but meanwhile, she was, you know, developing, you know, her own desire to do theater and her own experiences. And now, when she's a couple of years older, I think I'd like to actually have her do some of my pieces. Mm-hmm. But this is our first working together where she's actually performed something for me.
Yeah. So is that exciting for you?
Oh, it was just a thrill. I mean, it just... You know, I cried. I mean, it was beautiful too. She's, I'm very proud of her. You know, she's got an incredible voice, and she's very professional, and she knows how to interpret songs well, which is like her own thing. You know, it's like that's the miracle of having children. You know, they are their own spirits with their own destinies,
especially when they're 16.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially when they're 16. But we had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Great. Okay, well, this is the Lesbian Power Authority, and we're talking to Sharon Bridgeforth. We're going to do a little music break, and we'll come back. Sharon's going to hang out with us for a while and maybe read some more. We're going to talk about Root Woman Theater and anything else that comes to our mind. So right now we're going to listen to, I don't know, something about that last piece got me thinking about Ma Rainey and the Crew, but I'll make blues. So
all right.
That's where we're going to go next.
Big fight, everything seems to go wrong. I looked up to my surprise, the girl I was with was gone. Why she went, I don't know. I mean to follow everywhere she goes. Folks said I'm crooked, I didn't know where she took it. I want the whole world to know. They say I do it. Ain't nobody caught me. Y'all got to prove it on me. When I was last night with a crowd of my friends, they must have been women, cause I don't like no men. It's true, I wear color and a tie. Make the wind blow all the while. But the say I do it, ain't nobody caught me. They still got to prove it on me.
Kill me. be strong.
Marla Glenn also loved me from her CD called Love and Respect. And we're back here on the Lesbian Power Authority, and Sharon Bridgeforth is a studio guest this evening. So Sharon, Bulge Jean Stories, how did you come to write that? And is that your first, you had a piece in Does Your Mama Know, but is this your first like full-length book of?
Yeah, this is, I've been in some anthologies, but this is my first book. And I started writing, I wrote the first Bulge Jean story, which is called Bulge Jean and That Woman, probably in 92. I was managing syphilis cases for the health department, which meant for Austin, Texas, and as a day job. And it meant that I had to really, really, really get into people's business and get out in the street.
Just a little more information than you wanted to know. A
lot of information. And I had to really, like, get inside of the community and, you know, get information. And my job was to find people and bring them in and offer them, well, get them tested and treated if necessary. And as a result of that work, I started like getting a lot of information about the community, because I'm from Los Angeles. I'm not from Austin, and I hadn't been living there that long. And I started hearing stories, you know, about Miss So-and-so who lived with Miss So-and-so for like 40 years, and Miss So-and-so worked over at the church. And I started noticing all these older black dykes, you know, and I was so happy, you know, to see them, and so happy to hear their stories, even though it was like third, fourth hand information. But I wanted to celebrate them, and I wanted to imagine what it must have been like to be part of the community as a whole and not as a part, you know. And so I also wanted to explore, I didn't have all the language for this then, because I just kind of did it, you know, and lived inside of it. And then later I kind of thought about it and got feedback and began to be able to articulate what it was all about. But now I know that I was also trying to explore the heart of a butch bulldagger. And so for that reason, whenever Bulge Jean talks, usually her language is poetry, because I believe that poetry is the language of the heart. And also I wanted to look at community and ways that we've survived. And so the stories are primarily told through narrators. And the narrators are the griots, or the keepers of history and information, or the nosy neighbors, however you want to look at it, the gossipers. But it's a series of stories. Bulge Jean lives in different lifetimes in different geographic locations, trying to learn her life lesson, which is to love herself. And so in the bookstores, they usually call them linked stories, or the people that market call them linked stories. I think of it as a novel and as a way of trying to also put the oral tradition on the page. And so the reason it's structured the way it is on the page is because I was trying to capture the ways that people use rhythm and language and song and poetic dialogue when they talk.
So that the page kind of comes a visual representation of what's happening in the voice?
Yeah, and yeah. In a way to find the rhythm. And really, I've been told that if you read them out loud to someone, the experience is different than if you just read it to yourself. And I know for me that's true, but I've also been told that by people who purchased the book. So that was also why I was very excited to do the audio recording, because it's like another layer of the life,
right.
Of the work.
So when you were talking about that, you heard about this one who's talked about that one. Did you actually talk to women in the community, or are these mostly women you've just made up in your head?
The women in the Bulge Jean stories are fictitious. They're not based on anyone. I took pieces of information, maybe as a seed. I didn't get to talk to those bulldaggers. I did hear information about them through either people that were, I worked with actually some older women who liked telling me stories, because they used to come hear me read or come to performances, and they, because I was kind of speaking their language more or less, they started like telling me stories too, which was really exciting. And so So some of those women gave me seeds that I used, but I made up all of the situations. And I think I was also grieving because my older relatives are all dead, and I was missing them. My mother's family is from Memphis, and I used to go, and they're originally from Mississippi, but I used to go to Memphis a lot, and I got to be around them a lot when I was growing up, and I was missing them and trying to capture their voice. So I say I was like trying to reclaim my grandmother's language. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. that's why I use the word bulldagger, because that's what she called lesbians. And that's the name Bull Jean mm-hmm. kind of is a play on that.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to put the stories together?
I had been writing them because once Miss Bull Jean came through, she just kept coming through. And every time I tried to write a performance piece, there she was. So finally, I just kind of collected them. So a lot of the stories are in existing performance pieces that we've performed around, and then some of them are not. They're new. So from 92 until probably I'd say about May of 98 is when I did the collection.
Do you think she's going to come back?
Oh, yeah.
Are there going to be more?
Oh, yeah. She's going to come back. She got a lot more to tell. And I have, like, so many things that I'd like to do with this character. I'd like to do a film. I'd like to do a novel, you know, like not a novel in terms of linked stories, but a more non-linear type of novel, mm-hmm. not written in short story forms.
You've read a couple of times in Minneapolis now. Have you been reading around the country too? Or
yes, I have.
And what's the reception been like? Obviously, people like them, but do people then come and offer you more stories?
Yeah, it's been such an incredible blessing and such fuel for me. The response has been so far really positive, and it seems that people from different ethnicities, different class levels, different sexual orientations, you know, seems like different kinds of people basically are able to find something to relate to in the stories. And I think that the humor that I tried to capture, the humor which is the blues, you know, the humorous way that the blues captures talking about survival and the hard times, was what I was trying to capture with the stories, which is why I consider them blues stories. And so I think that that bluesy way of telling history or telling a thing might be the train that we can all get on, you know. But yeah, people tell me their stories, and especially a lot of older people, especially a lot of older black people who maybe have migrated from the South to bigger cities and kind of had to change their way of speaking, you know, mm-hmm. and when they hear these stories, right. They're like, they go right back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But all kinds of different kinds of people have really had some incredibly positive input for me, and incredible stories of their own, you know, that they've kind of given me glimpses of. So it's made it a wonderful experience for me to, because it feels like an exchange, and that's what I think, for me, that's what art is about. It's an exchange.
Well, yeah, and that doesn't happen so often with authors. They put a book out and, you know, they may do a couple of readings, but there isn't that ongoing dialogue with the material, which I think this book really fosters a lot for that.
Yeah, and I think that Lisa, the publisher is Redbone Press, and Lisa Moore is the publisher, and her and I are both like very working class kind of people, you know, and we're worker people, you know, and so are the people in the stories, and so it kind of all rings some kind of synchronicity for mm-hmm. us, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because that way of just getting out there and, you know, and keeping the focus, you know, being about the exchange and all the work that goes into making that happen is also all the places that the joy comes from.
So will you read us another one?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'll read just a short bit. A lot of cussing in my stories, you know. And so
It's getting later in the day, so we don't really care that much about it. But
well, it's always hard for me to decide what to read on the radio.
I know, I bet.
So Lisa and I both agreed that the B.J. LaRue story could work because there's no cussing in that one. And I have a little tiny piece of one here.
Should I get the beeper button?
Yeah, let me get ready. Now, this one, this is called The Power of Nomo. And this is actually a part of a longer story, and it's also the pivotal point in the book. It's the place where Bill Jean actually has internalized her lesson, learned it, and doesn't need to go back to that place anymore. This little piece, which is more like a poem, came about because a dear friend of mine who's now dead told me that her and her girlfriend had broken up. And so she gave me the, like, bravado form of the story. And she said, yeah, girl, I told her I ain't sweet no more. And I thought about that, and this is what happened. There is so much silence without you. It's the hardest thing. I'll never get used to this silence without you. I am trapped by my own space. My memory remains locked in your voice, forcing me to grieve the days of our discontent. Silence holds me now and keeps me restless in the absence of you. Used to be sweet, thoughtful-minded, helpful-handed, empathy actions. Used to wouldn't mind give my last smile to my woman. Used to all talk about how sweet I be. Well, I ain't sweet. No more. Put sweet out myself. Sweet ain't got me nothing but left. I done decided no more. No more sleeping with sorrow in an empty bed. No more longing what can't be filled. No more your last visit ghost give me hainted heart. Can't get drunk enough. Mind scarred. I ain't chasing the blues no more. It's time I settle down with me.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
We're going to listen to Lotus Perez.
Oh, yeah.
It's a friend of yours. I'm so excited. I was excited to find Lotus's music in the first place, but now that I know somebody who knows her, it's even more exciting. You picked out this one. Do you know what the studios? Do you know?
Yeah, it's about she kind of is talking about the vestiges of love and how we have to hold on, you know, and to pretty much have faith. Even though life is really hard and love is hard and sometimes it feels like we're just pieces, you know, hanging on. It's kind of a song of hope about how we can kind of hold each other. She is an incredible singer and a very, very dear, dear friend. She lived in Austin for a while and has recently gone to San Francisco to do a little bit of touring. And I miss being able to just stop by her house for coffee. She's my coffee friend, her and her partner. And Lourdes and I actually collaborated on an early cassette that I did called Soul Cycling. I don't speak Spanish, but I understand what Lourdes is saying. I was so deeply moved by her music and we felt a connection in terms of our artistic journey. And so I wanted to layer language. And so in this Soul Cycling recording that we did some years ago, she sings on there and I do poetry.
Great. So this is Lourdes Perez.
Te digo que hay amor, yo te prometo que hay amor. En este seco corazón tengo un lugar, un sitio para dos vestigios del dolor. En su camino se olvidó de destrozar. y tengo como prueba un te quiero que se cuela entre dos lágrimas que se han vuelto cristal. Y tengo como prueba dos brazos que te esperan y una canción que en un sillón te decanta. De un lucero de julio un aguacero para que bañe la tristeza de tu andar. Y te guardé un lucero de julio un aguacero para que borre la tristeza de tu andar. Te juro que hay amor, yo te prometo que hay amor. En este seco corazón tengo un lugar, un sitio para dos vestigios que el dolor en su camino se olvidó de destrozar.